Welcome to the podcast series, Intel on AI. Each episode explores human-centric topics related to artificial intelligence through conversations with leaders in the field. I'm your host, Abigail Hing Nguyen. The Partnership on AI is a research and policy organization founded by Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and a number of other technology corporations here in Silicon Valley. It's a nonprofit committed to the responsible use of artificial intelligence, which researches best practices for AI systems and is also seeking to educate the public about AI. With me today is Tara Lyons, the Executive Director of Partnership on AI. Tara, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
You and I come from a very similar background in tech policy in Washington, D.C., so I'm very excited to dive in with you on a number of topics. And I thought we could start with your very interesting work for the White House CTO in the Obama administration. Would love to start with, you know, what brought you to that role? What is the role of the United States CTO? And what were some of your projects while you were there?
Well, first of all, that feels like an eon ago, even though it was only 4 years ago that I left that job. But, you know, a lot has happened in politics in the last 4 years, especially here in the United States. I joined the Obama administration in the second term. I was there for a few years before the end of that administration. Then I stayed actually to help oversee the transition between that team and the incoming team, the Trump administration. So it spanned a few different eras in tech policy from the seat that I was sitting in. And it was a really amazing time to be in government, actually working in tech policy, primarily because the Obama team was just, first of all, there were people there well before I ever started work who were pioneering leaders, I think, in developing and enhancing government technology capacity. So it was really just an incredible place to cut my teeth as a policymaker, working alongside all these amazing individuals. And, you know, to have that experience in a government that really sponsored that work was also really extraordinary because, you know, some of the climate more recently has been not necessarily as, how should we say it, pro-science potentially, as the government was back then. And so having the sponsorship of the president directly for some of our work and activities was something special.
What were some of the highlights of the policy aspects you touched on while you were there?
Well, when I was there, a lot of my focus specifically was on emerging technology policy, and AI policy, as it became known, was really my primary focus area in the last couple of years of the administration's work in that respect. It's funny because, you know, when I came in, I was sort of sitting on the shoulders of giants with respect to a lot of the work that had been produced more foundationally in the US government on data policy. Back then, this was just before 2015, probably, but as recently as then, it wasn't even called artificial intelligence policy. It was really called big data policy. And the government was sort of emerging into a more crystallized understanding. When I started my work with the CTO's office, we actually began an explosive campaign specifically focused on AI. And that was around 2015, 2016. When that work was started, we really ran through the tape, making that one of the priorities that we worked on right up until the last day of Obama's tenure, effectively. And we launched an initiative called the Future of Artificial Intelligence Initiative that the White House itself was responsible for overseeing on behalf of the president, but was an interagency coalition and a real kind of team effort cross government. So what that did was produce the first ever AI policy strategy of any government, which came out in 2016, given the work of our office. And then as a part of that work, we also produced an AI research and development strategic plan for the US government, working closely with, you know, agencies like the National Science Foundation and many other kind of science and technology mission-oriented agencies. And then the last thing we did actually before Obama left was produce a specific work focused on the future of work with respect to automation. So that was a big policy push towards the very end of the administration as well.
That's great. I'd love to drill into several of these pillars here. So what would you say were the priorities of that report? Like, what were the findings? I think this is 4 years ago, and then I'd love to kind of fast forward into the present and how those priorities are evolving and how you're seeing that change in terms of AI and policymaking.
So first of all, I'd say one of the big findings of that report series back in 2015, 2016 timeframe was that the government wasn't investing enough in considering, you know, both developing AI technology and also in considering its impacts and researching that in a fulsome way and really grappling with the intersection of AI and society. So a big focus of our report actually had to do with questions that have ended up becoming really the questions of the day, I think, with respect to these technologies. You know, how do we ensure that they're used responsibly? Questions of fairness, transparency, and accountability were among those that we kind of posed in the report and surfaced recommendations around. There was a lot of focus around government readiness. And this kind of speaks to the point that you made about the focus of the CTO's office, where, I mean, frankly, part of the reason for the US Digital Services creation in the Obama era was because government was not able to do things at the speed, level of efficiency, or effectiveness necessary to keep pace with the broader world. And that speaks to challenges that government has that have been around for decades and generations in, you know, making sure that it's nimble enough to be effective, but then also special challenges with respect to keeping pace with technology development at the very cutting edge of what industry and academia is producing and finding. You know, there's no area I think that that is more urgent a problem in than AI policy specifically. So we did a lot of digging into that. I think those are still questions that should remain big priorities of the government to address. And also the investment levels as well. You know, I think back when we were working on this report series and this initiative, we had a ton of attention and investment from agencies that were the kind of clear players and the people who needed to be at the table. Department of Transportation working on automated vehicles policy, the FAA working on drone integration into the US airspace system, National Science Foundation, the climate related agencies, and so on and so forth. But beyond science and technology mission oriented agencies, there was not a clear call to action, I think, for other parts of the government. And even when it was clear that they would be impacted by these changes taking place with respect to technology development, and even when it was clear that they had equities in these questions, Department of Labor with respect to automation and the labor market, and other agencies supporting social services, et cetera, all really needed to have a voice and perspective sitting at that table. And it was hard to surface AI policy as one of the priorities that they should be thinking about at that period. So, you know, one of the questions I ask myself often is, have things changed enough in the last 5 years such that it's clear that this is a conversation that needs to be had at all levels of government and in a much further depth, I think, than the way in which it was had 5 years ago when I was there.
What do you think are the key priorities that policymakers should be thinking about in the AI space today?
Well, one right off the bat, I think, is existential in some ways. It has to do with how government uses these technologies. And this is a question that has really come to the fore in public conversations about the use of AI, responsible AI development and deployment, especially in the last 5 years. You know, what role does the government have, first of all, in regulating responsible use of these types of technologies, tools, and platforms? But then secondarily, as user, as a procurer, what responsibility does government have to understand the impacts that it may have in deploying some of these technologies? You know, what guardrails need to be introduced with respect to government use? And this is, you know, the classic example, I think, here more recently has especially been in the realm of facial recognition technologies and the use of those by public agencies, not just here in the US, but also abroad. And, you know, what are the specifications that need to be introduced such that government organizations are effectively educated and vendors are transparent about what they're selling to government organizations, such that it's clear what is being purchased and for what reasons, and what impact that is going to have on citizens ultimately at the end of the line. So, you know, it's been a topic of conversation among the types of folks that I mentioned before, really came in early in the Obama administration to help build out the US Digital Service. Procurement, I think, is a running joke within a lot of the folks that I know who worked in the government in that era, still work there now, is one of the less, you know, kind of shiny objects maybe for public attention, but is one of the most important vehicles for effective change making within the government. So I think that's a really big one.
So one of the challenges I think the government faces with AI talent is that it's very hard for them to compete for it. Like even in Silicon Valley, you know, the big players are constantly competing for the best engineering talent. It's hard to attract that type of talent to a government job that is not going to compensate them, you know, nearly as well. How does the government bridge this gap?
That's a $1 million question, quite literally,
right?
Not more than that. All jokes aside, you know, one personal observation I can offer is that working as I have for the last 3-4 years at the nexus of so many different types of organizations at the Partnership on AI, civil society and advocacy organizations, academic institutions, industry organizations, is that I think a very important conversation has started in the community about how people are spending their time. And, you know, this has manifested itself in ways most pronounced, I think, in some of the emergent, you know, movements I think we see building within the technology community, where in some companies there have been not just rumblings, but outright protests, you know, important conversations being surfaced by employees of those organizations about the values of the institutions they work for and whether that's aligned with personal preference and interests as staff members and contributors to that work and those missions and kind of overall directionality and strategy of those organizations. And, you know, I think it's up to every person to decide for themselves where they feel most comfortable operating, how they want to be investing their time, energy, and talent. But I think one thing that can be said of government service is that it is always an opportunity to do good and to make an impact. And I think nowhere is that truer than in the realm of technology policy, because the diff that exists, if you will, between the status quo kind of state of play and the opportunity available to people who go there and, you know, spend a tour of duty, we used to call it, invest a couple years at least in direct service, public service, is just an extraordinary opportunity in front of people. So every chance I get, I really try to bend the ears of all my colleagues in the tech community. You know, it's absolutely something I think everybody should do if they're interested in doing it. And I know a lot of people actually who left the tech industry in the last 10 years to go work for government and actually never went back. They just found it so fulfilling what they were doing in the public sector that they found the sacrifice worth it. So I think that that's one observation. That doesn't fix the problem though. So I just want to recognize that. I think that there's been just incredible, incredible salary inflation and market inflation in the talent industry with respect to AI, especially. And I don't have a great solution to that challenge, to be honest. I mean, it's a challenge we contend with, honestly, as a nonprofit organization, as competitive as we try to be at the partnership. You know, there are always tech companies who can offer more, clearly, given that we're a social sector organization. So it's something we deal with firsthand as well. And, you know, really the way we sell folks on joining us is with the mission. And it really works, I think, most of the time.
You know, I also came out of Washington, D.C. I worked for the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Antitrust, Business Rights, and Competition doing tech policy, and then clerked on the DC Circuit Court of Appeals as well. So coming out here to the Bay Area, it was really important to me to try to begin to bridge technology and policymakers. And I was able to do that through Partnership on AI. I actually see them as part of the solution because they are able to take this complicated system of government and explain it in a way that makes sense to technologists and vice versa. And what I've said to my technologists is like, you have to be involved in this system because these systems are regulating your work, right? They're regulating everything that you're producing potentially. And if you're not in communication, then you could potentially be regulated in a way that doesn't make sense to you. But if you are, then you help to shape what that looks like together. So kudos to everything you guys have been doing with PAI.
Thank you. That's a really strong endorsement of our work, actually. And I think you raise a really good point too, Abby, which is that really, from my perspective, there should not be a cavernous gap between the work that technologists are doing in industry or in other settings and the work of government. I actually experienced this culture shock directly myself when I moved to the Bay Area from Washington, D.C. There was very much this lack of awareness and frankly, lack of interest in what was going on the other side of the country, you know, here in the Valley. And I think a lot of it stems from the fact that people feel like the decisions being made in Washington don't have an impact on their day-to-day work. But I've seen that barrier broken down more and more across the last 4 years. And I think it's much clearer to people now that political decisions are, you know, in many respects, one that touch many, many aspects of the work of the technology industry and of the work of organizations related to it in advocacy or otherwise. And there's been much more interest, I think, expressed by the community that I'm a part of, at least, you know, not just here in the Bay, but also in other places too, in getting more involved in policy conversations directly. And that awakening, I think, is really, it's a heartening sign of the direction that we're moving in, because you know, the more narrow we can make the gap between technical work and its implications put into context from a social perspective and a political perspective, the better off we all will be.
So the Partnership on AI is engaged in a number of really interesting research initiatives. we had Alice Xiong, who heads up Fairness, Transparency, and Accountability Research at PAI, talk on episode 12 about her work with algorithmic fairness. And another area I'd love to drill into with you is the work on labor and economy. I think it's an area that lay audiences are particularly worried about when they think about artificial intelligence. Is AI going to take away my job? And I'd love to hear more about some of the work that you guys are doing in this area.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm so glad you had Alice on. The work that she and her team are doing and have done is just amazing in the fairness space. And thank you for your contributions to that as well. And, you know, with respect to labor and economy work, this has been such an interesting area for us as an organization and for the wider community, I think, in part because of all of the questions I have heard asked across the last many years working in this space. The ones that have the fewest number of answers, I think, come in this realm. And I have to give credit where credit is due. We have an amazing team working on this at the partnership right now under the leadership of Katya Quinova and many other folks who have contributed. So they're the true experts on this topic. But I'll just say that we started this work really thinking at the ground level about what the most fundamental questions were that we should be asking as a community of practitioners, developers, you know, people with decision-making power, advocates and civil society representatives, and representatives of worker voice organizations and workers themselves. You know, how should we all be gathering to think about what the critical next steps are with respect to setting norms effectively such that we can move the direction of AI development towards enhancing prosperity instead of detracting from it and enhancing inequality? So that was kind of the fundamental set of questions that we really started with. And from that, over the past year plus, we've worked to develop a couple of different work streams, the earliest of which was actually focused on what we called the promotion of workforce well-being. And we came out with a set of recommendations related to that actually earlier this summer that really focus on what kind of pillars of workforce well-being should be prioritized and protected throughout the process of AI integration in the workplace. And then we produced from that a set of tools for organizational leaders, for workers, and other types of stakeholders, really aimed at helping guide organizational thinking on what we've kind of described as this extended journey of protecting and promoting workforce well-being throughout the AI integration process. So that is something that a lot of leaders that we understand in the business community and outside of it, that's a question that they've been grappling with and something that we've tried to meet them with a set of really practical frameworks to address. And then the much more lofty question, frankly, and a very important one, is at a higher level than that, I think, this question of how we can consider together as a community the fact that technological advancement itself is not necessarily predetermined. The way that we talked about this at the White House when I was working on these questions previously was kind of with the tagline, technology is not destiny. So in other words, what can we do as the people working on developing it?
You mean to shape its course.
Right, exactly. Such that the outcomes that we're producing are not, you know, taking displacement, for example, or economic inequality as a given as a result of what we're building.
That's actually really interesting. How would that manifest in terms of either policy intervention or even something that PAI might put out as best practices or recommendations?
Yeah. So the main object of the work we're doing there now, we've actually stood up a steering committee that we call the AI and Shared Prosperity Steering Committee. It's a really illustrious group of individuals. I won't rattle through all of them now, but, you know, it's a multi-sector initiative, which reflects our ethos and way of working as an organization, obviously. So we have industry, civil society, and academic representatives working on that. And part of the question set that that group is working to answer, you know, together with our broader community right now, is working on first defining specific objectives that industry actors, for example, should pursue to contribute to this concept of shared prosperity. So in other words, what would be tangibly different about a company that ensures its AI development and deployment strategy is inclusive by design and thinking about workers from the start?
Do you have examples of what that could look like for a corporation to be pursuing their development in that way?
Well, I was going to say, actually, that's part and parcel with what we're trying to tease through right now. So, you know, not being able to offer much more specific than that, I think I'll just say from my personal perspective, you know, there's a lot that companies can do, even within the confines of our current economic system and the incentives and pressures that any corporation faces to really think about worker needs and outcomes by design. And I think, you know, sometimes that's an afterthought. Often it's thought of as an intervention, you know, after technological development or after you consider upgrading your tech stack or whatever it happens to be. But thinking about those needs from the outset of the process is really kind of what we're trying to inspire more organizations to do. And part of what that requires is working with a different set of stakeholders than institutions are used to working with and taking those voices seriously in a way that they might not be used to listening. So that's true of a lot of our work at the partnership, actually. We've really tried to expand the bench of contributors in any of these questions, not just related to labor issues, but also, you know, with respect to fairness questions, documentation practices, AI safety questions, any other number of aspects of our work. You know, our TAC is really about making sure that the people who need to be at the table are there, even if they're not the usual suspects in technology policy questions. The second goal is really in developing a way to measure whether progress is being made towards these objectives. So how can we hold organizations accountable? How can a given actor developing or deploying AI quantify whether it's advancing towards those objectives around contributing to shared prosperity? And especially when, you know, you can't see my hands right now, but shared prosperity in air quotes, how do we define that? What does it look like? How do you measure it? I think are really important questions. And that's part of what we're teasing out right now. And then the third point is really around developing more practical frameworks for actually making sure that we can do this, right? And that might include pathways or policies that companies can adopt to advance these objectives. You know, we don't see this as a replacement. One important point, I think, is this is not a replacement for public policy intervention, which is absolutely crucial to positive economic outcomes, but rather an important part of the equation is in what individual actors can do, you know, between now and when policy is generated, and also even after that point to align, you know, their organizational values and priorities and incentives around these as principal objectives. You know, that conversation has been bubbling, I think, for a long time in industry. It's taken on different forms. I guess it got a fresh coat of paint when AI was introduced as the term of art more recently in the last 5 years or so. But it's kind of an age-old question and it's a tough nut to crack. So we'll see what we can do.
Now, do you think that, and there's several schools of thought on this, whether we have existing bodies of law that are sufficient to address most of the changes that are coming with AI technology? Or do you think we're going to see a separate AI-focused regulatory regime, something akin to food and drug or other highly regulated industries?
Honestly, you know, there are differing perspectives on this. So I won't pretend that there is one unifying approach or best way of going about thinking about this. But my perspective, personally, having worked in policy and now in civil society, is really that, especially in the United States, I think it's going to be the case that we see policy and regulatory development along the lines of application specific questions or sector specific questions. And part of that in the United States is informed by our government structure, the way that laws, regulations, and policy are developed. In the United States here, we have an agency or a department in the federal government responsible for diverse aspects of policymaking. So I rattled off some of them before when I was talking about the federal work that we conducted back in the Obama administration, but it's still the case today, will probably be the case for a long time yet, that departments like, for example, the Department of Transportation are responsible for overseeing policy within their specific realm. So I think that we will likely not necessarily see an emergent separate regime in the US governing these different uses. I also think it's particularly challenging in the AI realm because although we like to use the phrase AI kind of as a unifying concept, there's so much baggage, right, in that term. I don't need to tell you how much is wrapped up in that, but it refers to so many things, so many different products and services and applications. And even in our work at the partnership, you know, we get kind of wrapped up with tech companies as one sector that we work with quite often. But if you look at that more closely, we work with platform companies, social media companies, we work with advertising companies, we work with media organizations, and there's such a diverse spread of interests and products that these organizations are all working to deliver. So I think that it will remain the case. You know, I know that there's a lot of popularity with the term big tech. quote unquote. But what that refers to, I think, is actually it contains multitudes, I guess, is the point that I'm making. And I think in the policy realm, the same is true from a policymaking perspective as well.
Now, Tara, you sit at an interesting intersection, not just between technologists and policymakers and other stakeholders, but also across governments. You work with the United States, with Europe, with Asia, and I'd love to hear some of the observations that have come out of your experience working with these different regimes.
Well, this is another case where there are multitudes. So I think my first reaction to that question is just that, you know, one historical perspective, that's kind of a funny thing to say, given that this is not a long history, but in the last 5 years, a lot has changed, like I said at the beginning. And one of the things that has changed is the generation of international attention in public policymaking circles to these questions. Like I said before, when I was working in government in the US 5-6 years ago, and even more recently than that, honestly, it's hard to generate attention for these issues given the amount of breadth and depth of focus areas that any government has to be juggling at any given time. And oftentimes, technology policy issues do not rise to the fore of the issues that governments are considering for understandable reasons, but you know, that's still the case. So I think what has shifted in the last 5 years really is that we've seen kind of these coalitions globally start to emerge, proactively identifying areas for work related to policy questions in the AI ecosystem. So we've seen a lot more activity, for example, in the EU on these questions, the EU Commission, multilateral bodies like the OECD and other global governance entities have really kind of picked up the ball and started running with it. And we've seen a lot of activity in parts of Asia as well. You know, there's been a lot of attention paid, for example, between the different approaches in the US and China with respect to technology development and regulation. There have been a lot of concerns raised about the CCP's use of technology, and especially AI technology, and some of the concerns raised around the Uyghur population and treatment associated with it. And that kind of made its way into the US facial recognition debate, for example. So that's just one pinpointed issue where these questions have become more acute on a global scale, I think, more recently. And, you know, I should also say that has also implicated tech transfer policy in the US and the way that we've kind of considered our international relationships with different players across the globe with respect to sensitive technology. So that has had a lot of follow-on implications, I think, in the national security space, which, you know, could probably be its own separate podcast as well. But
right, for sure.
One of the big concerns is the fractious nature of what policies we've seen emerge. And, you know, talking to people in the policy space globally, I think one of the things top of mind for a lot of policymakers is just how can we ensure that there's a shared set of human values being, you know, acknowledged and used to inform the way forward? What is the place for human rights policy and legal frameworks, for example, in a lot of these questions? And how can we ensure there's uniform distribution, prioritization around that? How do we make sure that there's interoperability between jurisdictions? That's always a question with respect to technology regulation. But I think, you know, especially with AI, that's a question that is widely being considered. You know, I think the topics are endless, but there's a lot of activity, I think, now, and a lot more attention being paid to these issues than there used to be. So that's one big takeaway. Like I said before, I've been really heartened by the kind of closure of the gap that I've experienced, at least for my part, from where I sit between the policymaking community and technologists. And I think there's been a much bigger appetite in the policy community as well to really work with multi-stakeholder entities and learn from different players in the ecosystem with respect to the state of the art, with respect to concerns and challenges and opportunities related to tech development and AI, and to really learn from, you know, people working on the ground, either in advocacy roles or in developer roles, and hear from them firsthand so that we can more deeply inform policy. And I think, honestly, you can't do enough of that as a policymaker.
Yeah, I know the OECD is doing a lot of interesting work in this space, and I'm wondering, what other intergovernmental bodies would you say are really focused on trying to bring together different voices across the globe on AI?
The G7 has been doing some work on these issues that I'm aware of, at least. And they're also, honestly, you know, not necessarily government sponsored directly, but still what I would kind of classify as multilateral engagement mechanisms in the form of standards bodies, for example. So, you know, International Standards Organization, or ISO, is a big player in this space. They involve themselves both with global governments and with organizations like corporations and academic institutions in informing the standards that they set. Some of our partners, for example, are involved in standard setting in their own ways. Underwriters Laboratory, you might recognize from their logo on pretty much every tech device you can find in your house. And organizations like that, I think, are really critical to the future of what certification looks like with respect to technology development and design. So I think that there's an emergent class of institutions kind of thinking about these questions. Some of them, like I said, directly government sponsored, some of them otherwise. But, you know, like you said, there's been a lot of activity in the OECD on these topics. There have been a lot of track two dialogues, actually, among different nations that I think have inspired more cooperation on these issues. And some of that, you know, took place when I was still working government. It's happened since then as well. So, like I said, I'm heartened that those deliberations are happening, and making sure that they're all synced up with each other in some way, shape, or form, I think, is the next big challenge ahead.
So Tara, looking ahead at the future of this field, what worries you and what excites you the most?
I think insofar as challenges or worries, you know, one of the things that keeps me up at night is this question of how much we can inspire substantive cooperation between individuals and organizations with shared goals, working towards shared values. And I guess put another way, the Partnership on AI exists for this purpose, right? We were originally founded by a group of concerned scientists who, by and large, worked in industry, but came together with civil society organizations and foundations and academics to formulate this coalition that has blossomed into this incredible, you know, 100 organization plus community that we've built over the last several years. And it contains so much promise. And frankly, it has delivered in so many ways. Our impact, I think, has been extraordinary, even in the short time that we've existed. And I'm so excited to see, you know, what the Partnership on AI goes on to do next. But I also think that there's been important conversations started about the accumulation of power and wealth in the technology industry, and a stratification that I think, you know, you can start to see happening among certain parts of our community. And I think it raises really important questions about how these shared values that we talk about so often, and I use we in the royal sense, you know, as a community of developers and activists and practitioners, all the people we work with and all the organizations and all the people that I've gotten to know, not just in this work, but beforehand, working from government, how do we make sure that we're all seeing each other and doing that effectively and taking voices seriously who raise concerns? So I think that's one big thing for all of us to be working on. And it especially speaks to how we enable people to speak truth to power in ways that afford for a fulsome conversation about those concerns.
Yeah, it's an ongoing challenge.
Yeah, it's important for companies especially, but it's also important for governments. It's important for any organization that finds itself in a position of authority, and especially when the stakes are so high, I think, as in the case of so many AI applications, I think that's really critical. I think that's a big, big question. And that, frankly, is the same thing that offers me hope. I think that, you know, the people like you, Abby, frankly, and your colleagues at Intel, a lot of whom we've gotten to know in the course of our work together, a lot of the people that I know across, you know, the work that we do spanning our entire ecosystem, there are so many incredible minds and great actors pushing the ball down the field. And I have tremendous hope for what that will produce and result in. And I really think that, you know, like I sort of referenced when we were talking about the labor and economy set of priorities, ultimately, this all just comes down to choices that we make as human beings. And, you know, I know organizations are powerful, sometimes unwieldy things, but ultimately people work within them. And I really think the last 3 years of this job and, you know, time spent before that have really demonstrated to me the power of individual voice and collective voice in changing the course of history, honestly. And that's true even in realms beyond tech policy.
Yeah. And you're among them, Tara.
Thank you. That's really nice of you to say, but it really takes a team. And so It's been an honor.
I completely agree with you. Yeah. I am also encouraged by so many good people in the industry who are really just trying to do the right thing.
Likewise. Yeah. 2020 has also been a year that's offered a lot of lessons. You know, we've all been sitting at our desks at home, but in many ways, I think this year has forced us all to look beyond our own individual settings and really consider like the power of movement building as well. So, you know, what has happened with respect to racial justice in this country, for example, even in the last 8 months, has also been pretty extraordinary. It really calls into question, like, you know, how do we make this a movement, not a moment? Those words are somebody else's, not mine. But, you know, I think that's also true of what's going on in the tech world right now. So I think as long as we can kind of keep up the energy, momentum, keep up the hope, which is really important too, I have high hopes that great things are in store for the future.
Tara, thank you so much for taking the time to share your insights into the policy field. I'm really appreciative of all that you're doing, and I'm looking forward to seeing all the great things ahead.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me, Abby. I really appreciate it.